Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's up and welcome back to Kind of Funny's The Matrix in Review. Of course, we're ranking, reviewing, and recapping all of the Matrix movies. I'm Tim Geddes, and I'm joined by the producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Whoa.
You can always tell how Nick's day is going for how high his beanie is. So I really appreciate this right now. It's going out of frame. Like that. Hey,
let's just put it this way. We played Mario Party earlier today.
Say no more.
For charity. And I can't. Let's put it this way. I had 5 stars going into the final like star round. I was dominating. Well, dominating is a strong word. I was doing well. Kevin was there. Mike had 3 stars. They gave him 2 stars, Tim. And because he had 20 more coins than me, because I think Joey stole some coins from me, or Andy stole some coins from me, I got second place. This game is rubbish.
It worked out so perfectly.
It's a terrible game,
but it was great content.
That other voice you hear, of course, is the big dog, Kevin Coelho.
Hey, what's up? What's going on?
Who just showed me a trailer for a new Nicolas Cage movie where Nick Cage plays Nick Cage. Do you guys know what I'm talking about here?
No.
It's like It looks so good. I have no idea what it's called. It might have been a fever dream. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if it wasn't real. But it looks so good.
Look into it. Just Google Nick Cage as Nick Cage and see what happens. But you can do that later. I want you to stay here right now because you need to hear the beautiful voice of one Paris Lily.
Cookies need love like everything does.
I can't wait to talk about this one with y'all. Oh my God. Of course, this is The Matrix in Review. This is Kind of Funny's in Review, where every single week we get together to rank, review, and recap 2 different movie franchises. Right now, we're doing The Matrix and Spider-Man. This week, it's the big one, our final in review of the year after this, Spider-Man No Way Home. Then, when we return in January, it is going to be a jam-packed month. The first couple weeks, we're returning to The Matrix in Review with Resurrections that we'll be doing with Paris, which I'm very excited about. We will also be doing our return to Scream in Review with the new Scream coming out. And the thing that I am most excited about, we're returning to the Karate Kid Cobra Kai in Review with season 4. Woo, it's going to be a good time. So stay tuned here on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. If you want to get it as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny in Review and we'll be right there for you. If you wanted to get the show ad free and if you wanted to watch live as it's being recorded, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny. Just like our Patreon producers, Molecule Pranksy and Greg Miller returns to content next month. Nick should quit now. Remember, you can leave a little message by being a Patreon producer. With great power comes great responsibility. Today, we're brought to you by MeUndies, Trade, Coffee, Audible, and HBO Max, but we'll get to that later. Let's get into it right now. The Matrix Revolutions. Wait, oh, you had your hand raised. Sorry.
Yeah, I did. The movie that the trailer I sent you is called The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Yes. Yes, it is. That makes it even better.
That's so, man. Wow.
Huge.
Yeah. Huge. Damn. Good for him. Good for him, Nick Cage. Man. And also the cast of that movie, Pedro Pascal. Literally any comedian I've ever known. Looks fantastic. Can't wait for it. The Matrix Revolutions has a runtime of 2 hours and 9 minutes. It was released on November 5th, 2003, just 6 months after the May 15th, 2003 release of The Matrix Reloaded. It was the first live-action feature film to be released in both regular and IMAX theaters at the same time. The film had the widest release ever opening simultaneously in an unprecedented simultaneous global release. This film opened at exactly the same moment in every major city in the world on November 5th at 6 a.m. in Los Angeles, 9 a.m. New York City, so on around the world. That's kind of cool. You got to give it to them. In the old times when like midnight releases were actually at midnight, you know?
Yeah. So now the movie comes out 5 days before its scheduled release.
It does come out 5 days before the scheduled release. That
when
is
when does it open? Friday. When are we seeing it? Monday.
Wednesday.
Friday. Okay.
Directed once again by the Wachowskis, and music once again done by Don Davis. Now, I've been doing you all a disservice. I've only been reading the composer, who's Don Davis, but a lot of people have been tweeting at me, making sure that I share the love of Juno Reactor, who is an English musical and performing group known for their cinematic fusion of electronic global influences and orchestral symphonic approach, and for collaborating with Don Davis. So all the real dope shit is Juno Reactor. All the fight scene stuff, all the things that we really think of for Matrix. Besides that, that one element of the iconic Matrix theme with that rise, that like, Nick, give me the sound. The Matrix title logo sound.
Oh, yeah. I was like, do I do this normally?
Thank you. That's what I was looking for.
Okay. I was like, wait, is this one that I normally do, Paris? Or is he throwing me for a new one here?
I'm throwing you a new one. This one had a budget of $150 million, just like the last movie did. Now, a fun thing here that we talked about in John Wick, but we didn't talk about so far in The Matrix. Keanu Reeves reportedly earned $15 million for this movie, the equivalent of $400,000 for every minute of screen time.
Sweet.
Recently, though, there was a report that and this is a report that came out in the beginning of this year, and then there was an update in September of this year. But Keanu Reeves is just the best human being on the planet.
He really
he's
is.
He's just out there living his best life, just trying to make the world a better place. The report quoted that Keanu felt that the team and the crew were the ones who made the movie, and they should participate in the earnings. The actor reportedly made $10 million for the first Matrix, and after all was said and done, he ended up making $35 million. His profit-sharing deals for the sequels were way higher, estimated to being between 40 to over $100 million. According to the report, Keanu has given money from his salary to other actors or crew members from various films. The worldwide box office for the second and third Matrix, blah, 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 a lot more shit. But after everything was said and done, he gave away an estimated $75 million of his earnings for those projects. And that's outdated stuff. Since then, he's given even more with money he's made from Resurrections, just from like the signing and all that stuff. So it's like, it's pretty insane. Good for you, Keanu. And this one had a box office of $427 million.
Let the man eat
million.
A sandwich on a bench, for Christ's sake. Yeah, let him eat wherever he wants to eat.
Mm-hmm. Or some cookies, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, $427 million, the box office for this, which not good. When the last one made $739 million, but also not surprised based on the quality of that and then this, you know?
Yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow when you're Warner Brothers. Yeah. But if you were a Warner Brothers exec and you saw Reloaded, you had to see that train.
You had to see it. Like, oh no, this is not going well. Paris, I want to start with you on this, on the Matrix Revolutions. What did you think?
Ultimately, just a disappointment. It's kind of like I alluded to during the Reloaded discussion. I thought Reloaded could have been a great middle bridge movie if Revolutions was able to pay off some of the themes that they were setting up. And it just fell flat for me. I know we'll talk a lot about this in line, but the one thing that has always stood out to me, like I kind of said during the Reloaded thing, is that the Wachowskis were trying to do too many things at once. Animatrix, the video games. They filmed both of these movies back to back.
These movies and Enter the Matrix live action stuff was all filmed together.
All together. You then had, the tragic passing of Aaliyah, Gloria Foster passed away. So you had to reshoot a bunch of stuff. And I felt like if they would have just done Reloaded and then waited to get the feedback from Reloaded and applied that to Revolutions, it could have been a way, way better movie, but they simply didn't know because they just did it all at once. And a lot of the things that they thought the audience was going to get, it just didn't land. I think one of my biggest disappointments in this is Larry Fishburne, Morpheus. He got sidelined for this movie. He was basically just a background character for the most part, where you really wanted to see his faith in everything that he had been fighting for, believing in the one, kind of pay off, and him to have a more active part in this third movie. And he just simply didn't. And, kind of like with Reloaded, we spent way too much time in the real world. And it's not what people show up to the Matrix to see. They want to see the Matrix. They want to be in the computer world and all the stuff that can happen there versus the things in the real world. So, I don't know. like I said, disappointment overall. I just think the direction they decided to take that third movie, it just didn't land.
Kev?
This movie sucks, man. And I've been saying it since the first one, where it's like, yeah, 2 and 3 are bad. And doing the rewatch, it's a bummer. I don't know if they were rushed or what. I hope 20 years that it's been since the first one? Like, I hope that, like...
Almost, yeah, 20, yeah, over 20 now, yeah.
Whichever Wachowski's working on this has got, like, comes with it, you know? Because, like, so much of this movie is just boring, you know? It's not entertaining. There's, like, a couple interesting fights, but, like, I think that's also being really generous. It's just hard to watch. Very little happens. Somehow it all takes 2 hours to get there, though. And it's just so convoluted. It's kind of a bummer. Like the amount of potential the first one had, but what are you gonna do? That's what happens with movies.
Nick.
Yeah, I'm echoing sentiments that you guys have said here. This movie was very disappointing with me, but after Reloaded, we all saw it coming, right? Because this was Reloaded was really, there's only two Matrix movies. There's the Matrix 1 and there's Matrix 2, Part 1 and Part 2. And it's unfortunate that they decided to push a trilogy with this, because there's some really cool ideas in both of those movies. And like I said last week, we talked about, to me, the Agent Smith idea of it being sort of him becoming a virus and him taking over everything. And that to me is the coolest idea. And I love the sort of role reversal of how, you know, he has to allow him to do that. Allow him to kill him in order for him to take over Agent Smith and stuff like that. All that stuff's really cool. And him going to the my phone's getting blown up here. Him going to the real world, him going to the robot city, all that stuff. I love this concept. I like the visuals behind it. It just takes so long to get there. And then they keep cutting back and forth between that and Mifune and the kid, who, don't get me wrong, Mifune is a badass, right? Well, he's like, knuckle up, and you want to see him. You're like, oh, this guy's badass, but we've only really seen him a couple times in the prior movie. That probably should have been Lawrence Fishburne, right? That should have been other characters that we knew.
Right.
We have
right.
all these other characters that were, those characters are just basically, piloting their way through mechanical line the entire time, while, you know, which is largely just Jada Pinkett Smith doing her job there. So, And we go back to the Oracle like 9 times. I'm like, dude, the Oracle, why don't you just bring the Oracle to you? Why don't you just call it? Like, why do we have to keep going back to the Oracle? The fight at the end, I think the big thing that they thought was going to save them was the fight at the end. And unfortunately, we've already seen that a bunch of times. We already saw him fight in the schoolyard. We already saw all the cool stuff that we could possibly do with the fighting in this movie. So we had to rely a lot on the sort of high concept of it. And it's unfortunately just... it couldn't do all the heavy lifting for a 2-hour film. Actually, really a 4-hour film when you're talking about Reloaded and Revolutions. And so it just fell flat, unfortunately. But there's a lot of cool stuff in here. It's just overshadowed by the sheer volume of pointless action.
Yeah, for me, Kevin always Kevin likes to call it like it is for him and say a movie sucks when he thinks it sucks. And I try not to say things suck. Like, I really think that, like, to me, there's not much value there, but I got to call it like it is. This movie sucks. This movie really, really sucks. And I hate that. And I think that it is much worse than Reloaded. Reloaded, I had some interest watching. I think that Reloaded is much worse than The Matrix. And like I said last week, I think that it is a horrible sequel. Like, it is a sequel to one of the best movies of all time. And it is just such a commodification of, like, and a misunderstanding of what was good about that first film, and kind of just doubling down on what people thought The Matrix should be. And this kind of just loses any of that. And like, Nick, what you're saying about that final fight, like, they kind of make you sit through all this other shit to get to it. And I just think it doesn't hold a candle to the mini Agent Smith fight in Reloaded. And it just sucks that I'm not even bringing up the fights and stuff from the first one, because they're not in the same league. It's a different type of movie. It's a different type of action. And I think that the mech stuff lasts. It there are moments, like Nick saying, moments of things that could be cool. I like line deliveries every once in a while, like the Jada Pinkett Smith line of like, I don't believe in the one, I believe in him. Like, that's so cool. But I feel like anytime something cool happens, it's followed up with something not cool, or there's a setup and they just like kind of do not stick the landing. Like the blind Neo stuff is just, it's bad. Like it should, that should be a cool use the force type stuff, but it's just never kind of never hits those highs.
I don't mind that part. Sorry if I can interject for a second. Just because they needed to find a way to sort of dumb down Neo's powers, and I like it a little bit better in this than they did in the first one where they just don't explain it to you whatsoever, right? They're just upgrades, right? We get that one line where it's like, upgrades. And then you're like, cool, everyone can fight better in this one. So I like having him in the real world. What I don't love is there's absolutely no tension whatsoever when he fights one Agent Smith while an infinite number of Agent Smiths watch him. You're like, he can't possibly win this. So, like, there's got to be another option here for him, which he finds. Sorry.
Well, continue. It's also that scene's just so distracting to me because I love the music. The final fight music is some of my favorite fight music of all time. It is as much as you could possibly go. And I don't think that the fight matches that. Like, it's not earned. But it's distracting to me because it kind of looks like the Smiths are singing. Like, it's so big and such a choir that every time I watch it, it seems like they're all just kind of singing it live. And
never it bothers me so much.
But Nick, to your point about the blind thing kind of working, like, I don't like it because, yes, it kind of, like, lessens his powers, but they, like, always immediately give him the one-up. They allow him to overcome that and just, oh, now I can see. And then he can fight in the Matrix or in the real world, like he fights in the Matrix. I just feel like almost everything is explained, but just because you say, oh, this is why this happened, doesn't make it good, doesn't make it earned. Paris,
see, I'll say again, going back to, I wish they didn't do them back to back. I think they could have gotten lessons learned from Reloaded, and the two things I think they should have explored more here in this third one. Number one is the Merovingian and just Club Hell, and, you know, I know, I guess the twins died, you would think they didn't because they're kind of like ghost-like characters. I would have liked to have seen the Merovingian's motivations, his conflict with the Oracle, that should have been the first act of the movie. That should have been the whole rescuing Neo type of thing. But it happened so quick. Merovingian's there for a couple scenes. He literally gets a gunpoint to his head and he just gives Neo up.
Terrible.
That made no sense to me. And the other thing, when I talk about the real world, again, way too much time in Zion, not nearly enough time in the machine world. That's what we should have seen in the third movie. Okay, you gave us Zion in Reloaded. Now let's go to the machine world. I always envision, and again, if people watch the Animatrix, they'll understand what I'm saying. The opening episode, it wasn't the opening episode, I think it was the second one. It was about the Resistance Part 1 and 2 or something like that.
Yeah,
but
they
showed the two machines walking into, like, I don't know, like a Senate hearing or something, right? And then they betrayed them. Right. Yeah. I would have loved the flip of that. And it's Neo and Trinity walking into, like, this council of machines and stating their case. And we get the machine's perspective on this whole situation versus this, you know, Deus Ex Machina or thing or whatever.
Like the giant baby face.
He says a couple words. And if you fail, it's like, come on. We should have.
Yeah.
Again, these are highly intelligent AI machines, whatever you want to call them. Right. Clearly, we're starting to see the machines lean more into humanity, right? The whole symbiosis of machines need us, we need them, vice versa. That should have been in the machine world. That conversation should have happened. Right. We should have seen a fleshed out agreement between Neo and the machines to say, all right, we're going to send you back in. You stop the Agent Smith virus. We're going to have peace. Instead, it just came off very hokey. And like I just keep saying, way too much time in Zion. I ultimately never cared about those characters in Zion. And
because,
I don't know.
Here's the other problem is, right, you don't care about those characters because we flew over millions and millions and millions of humans that are still subjugated. They're still imprisoned in the Matrix.
Right.
So, yeah, that's great. There's like 1,000 people in Zion who are helping this out. But what about the other people that have no idea they're prisoners in the Matrix? Like, it's very weird. And also, it's kind of a hard pill to swallow, no pun intended, that they just can't, they're like, fuck it, just reset the Matrix. Like, who cares? Like, it's Smith's a virus, just wipe the hard drive and reinstall the OS. How hard is it?
But I think the threat of it was Smith was eventually going to leave the Matrix and actually infect the machine world itself. Yeah,
definitely.
And that needed to be explained more. And they just kind of glossed over that too.
Well, I mean, Neo literally says that, right?
Like, yeah, but it was so quick. But how is he getting there? Why the train man, which again, another hokey thing
Jesus Christ,
they had
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, that was so
that's
dumb.
My biggest problem with the movie is, and a lot, it's kind of a lot of what we've been saying so far, but it's kind of the way this thing starts off is like, we have Neo, who is like, after the first movie, one of the coolest characters ever. And then the second movie, take it or leave it, I think overall, at least Neo does some cool things. But then you take this character and that's what you have him do for the first hour and a half of this movie, is kind of just seem like he's lost at a train station. It is right. Just so boring.
Limbo.
And so yeah. Damn weird. And it's like, how many times are we going to have these characters save Neo? And I feel like this last movie does everything the least interesting version of what we've already seen before. And that's kind of the biggest bummer. Almost every fight feels derivative of things we've seen, just lesser than. All the scenes are just, oh, we already had the Oracle conversations, just lesser than. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing for me is we've now had three movies where each movie introduces an entirely new crew of a ship and a different ship or whatever. And this crew sucks. Like, I thought the crew last time wasn't that great, but man, this crew is just a bunch of duds. And it's like, when you have a movie that is just dud after dud after dud with way too many characters, this movie introduces way too many new characters. And on top of that, in the first 10 minutes of this movie, I swear to God, they're like, okay, there's the train man, there's the Pathfinder, there's the promise. That I'm like, is this Kingdom Hearts? Like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this is trash.
And one other thing on that, again, I just don't think, I think it goes over people's heads because they don't explain it. Why was Neo able to separate his mind from his body and basically be stuck inside the Matrix or wherever he was in limbo? And then how did the humans get the two back together? They just kind of glossed over it. Oh, we did a little weird hacking here and, you know, and now he's back. I don't know. I wanted more explanation with those type of things.
It's unfortunate because that right there could have been the plot of Reloaded.
Yes.
The plot of Reloaded should have been Neo's been separated and the rest of the team has to figure out how to do a job for the Merovingian in order to get him back. Like,
exactly.
I remember watching this movie going, him going like, I want to strike a deal with you. And I'm like, oh, you got to make a deal with the devil to get, like, you have to compromise your morals here. You have to do something interesting and unique. And then Trinity just pulls a gun out. And I just saw this giant title that went over the screen that said lazy screenwriting. I'm like, why?
Exactly.
What the fuck? Literal fuck were they thinking with that?
Yeah.
And honestly, folks, if you're a screenwriter, an upcoming screenwriter, and you get a chance to make a sequel for a very, very, very profitable franchise, don't put Johnny Depp on a beach for an hour. Don't do it. Don't. It's boring to watch. No, no one's good enough of an actor to sit in an immaculate subway station and run back and forth and sell me on this, dude.
Yeah. No. And with that, like the lazy screenwriter thing, it's like the last movie we had to talk about the neutering Superman and how difficult that is. And when they don't do it, we're like, this is kind of weird or when they don't explain why he isn't able to overcome the obstacles and when they do with just like one line of dialogue, like Nick keeps talking about the upgrades thing. It's like even worse when the next movie, they neuter him by having the other guy say, I wrote down the line here. Down here, I make the rules. Down here, I am God.
Right.
What?
Where is here?
What the fuck? Do is,
yeah.
In between Matrix to this, program or something.
We're introduced to the young girl, Sati, who, and they're like, yeah, we're shipping her from one place to the other. And it's like, oh, you're getting her out of the Matrix. And the next time we see her, she's with the Oracle. It's like, what? Why don't you just drive her over to the Oracle? What is this train station? What do they do here? I think it's a router.
I think he's just sitting in a router or switch or something. Like, it makes no sense. Yeah.
It's their buffer from the machine city to the Matrix, right?
I thought they were trying to get her out of the Matrix, though.
No, they were trying to get her out of the machine city.
Yeah.
So she was the program in the machine city and they were hiding her in the Matrix.
Yes. Rogue programs.
She was exiled. Like,
basically go to the Matrix to hide out.
Ah, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, they explained that in the last one, right? Where programs are no longer necessary. They can become exiles.
Well, but that was confusing to me then too, because they were like, programs are no longer necessary, like vampires and werewolves and stuff. But I was like, but those in my brain were like, those were in earlier iterations of the Matrix, right?
Sure.
So where are all these other programs coming from that need to be, I guess they're running in the machine city somewhere, like the back end?
Yeah.
Or just in general?
I guess.
That would have been a really cool concept to explore of like, hey, the machine city has a fucking Matrix or a hard drive too that you have to hack into and figure that out. But yeah. I digress.
I just think ultimately going to, and I know we're going to jump into the actual story of this, but one thing I again that I wish they could have fleshed out and I thought would have been the ultimate compromise, the machines and Neo work together and kind of going to the point we're making earlier. The agreement is everyone's made self-aware. Everyone in the Matrix knows they now have a choice. You can go to the shithole that is the real world in Zion, or you can stay here and continue to live out your life. And yeah, and go. And that interesting balance of who decides they no longer want to be a part of a fake reality and who's like, you know what? It tastes like a T-bone steak to me. I'm staying, right? I thought they could have gone down that road and obviously they didn't. Or, they made Dragon Ball Z at the end.
Or the more interesting and more cerebral thing to do that I think would have been like very, very, very gutsy, but probably way too much of a risk, was at the very, very end, let the audience know that all of it's the Matrix. No matter what you've seen, no matter what you do, you're in the Matrix. So
that would have been Neo,
when he stopped the first squids in the last movie, I was like, oh, he's still in the Matrix. This is
Matrix in a Matrix. Yeah,
that's genius. That should.
Well, you know, Rick and Morty did that. Yeah, Rick and Morty did that. I think season one or season two, where it was basically a Matrix inside of a Matrix inside of a Matrix inside of a Matrix. Well, every time you think you're out.
One of the reasons why Inception was so impactful at the end, because you're like, you don't know. You'll never know if he got out of the dream state or if he's still doing this. It's an interesting, and for such a high concept sci-fi movie, it's what you want to almost leave your audience with, right? But at the end of the day, the biggest sin of both of these movies is that they're just simply not fun. There's just no fun to be had.
There's fun. There's 45 minutes of fun in Reloaded.
There's 45 minutes of watching Keanu Reeves and Lawrence Fishburne and Carrie Ann Moss share screen time, and I like watching those people. But you shouldn't get to Zion and be like, oh, we just got to get through this part. We just got to get through this part before we watch Neo or do something cool or Trinity do something cool again. Well,
that's the problem, though.
Because there's nothing that's not fun in the first one. The first one, you're like, it's clean and it's so fun and it moves super fast and it deals with really high concept stuff very simply and gets it to the audience. This one's like, at one point they asked the Oracle something. She's like, maybe I didn't know it. Maybe I didn't know it. It doesn't matter. I'm like, you're right. Yep. It doesn't. Yeah, I'm not going to think about this ever
again. Yeah. You're right, Nick. Comparing the first movie to this, in the first movie, every scene you're in, you don't want to leave, but you also can't wait to get back to any other part. Mm-hmm. With this one, every scene I'm in, I'm like, okay, let's get through this. But I don't know which one I'm ready to go back to, because like, I really don't care. And the problem for me is like, because of that, they treat us as if we're kind of smarter than the characters at points, including Neo. Like, you're telling me that Neo is getting bested by this random guy fighting him that is literally Mr. Anderson talking to him like this. That's, and the line he says is, who are you?
I know who you are. You're Smith. You're doing your best Hugo Weaving impression. Like you sound like Smith.
Whoa.
But, yeah, I will. I lost my train of thought, but that was, I think we've done it.
One last thing. It's it starts and I'm like, very confused, and it's like there's little throwaway things in the last movie that they said the big EMP thing and basically explained that all the ships like died, but do they not have EMPs just hanging around waiting to like,
you think they would
robot attack,
you think
that right?
Would be, you think they would have them at the gates of every single thing, but I guess they're burrowing
logical
through.
Yeah,
but just have
or
a couple
in the
like,
basement.
Or a field that's just shooting them through, like, detaching all of them.
I will give them credit for this, though, because, again, one of the, you know, when I forget the hammer, I guess, when Niobe pilots it in and they launch the EMP, Locke was like, you thought you did something good, but what you really did was you took down our entire defense grid. Everything was shut down they fired an EMP inside of there.
That's fair.
But I do think that, like, it wasn't doing much. They had lost the harbor for sure, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Like, the machines were gone. At that point, coming into that harbor without any line of defense, and they were just drilling down to get to the like delicious meat that is Zion.
Humans.
Yeah, what question I have before we get to the plot. Sure. What is a VTDS? Was that ever explained?
A VTDS?
Multiple times in this movie, they're like, has this man been tested for VTDS? I'm like, what? Or VTDs?
I don't know. I think that was a cool way to say that he was having a psychotic episode or something.
I thought if you went to the Matrix and you did that one simulation with the woman in the red dress, you might come back with a VTDS.
Transmission. I think, Nick, you actually might be right.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I did want to say before we start, though, one of the things that I think they nailed in the first one, I think, you know, Paris talked about here a lot, was if we're going to spend half our movie in Zion, it's got to be interesting. And we talked about this last time, but I go back to the first Matrix where there was this sort of macabre fascination they allowed you to have when we were on the Nebuchadnezzar, where there is just sort of like a weird thing you can touch into that like zombie shows do, that like apocalyptic movies do, where there's just a fascination with how human beings can survive in that kind of a world. And they nailed it in the first one, but in the next two, man, they showed you how they lived,
and it's like too much. You don't want to live there.
Yeah, no, you're like I'm team Cypher. Get me out of here.
Mm-hmm. Nick.
No.
Let's get to it.
Boo.
Thank you. Blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah. It's like, dude, I'm just getting a cup of coffee. Blah, 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 blah. Well, all right, ladies
Step Brothers, right?
Oh my God.
Step Brothers used this song for the drum set scene.
Oh God, that's so funny. That's amazing. The Matrix Revolutions. Everything that has a beginning has an end. Until Warner Brothers wants to drive more people to their subscription platform, then we'll see what the shareholders have to say about that. We go into the Matrix and everything turns gold this time, and then back to green, and we pop out on the ship's official name. I saw online was the Mjolnir, but they call it the Hammer because I think no one could pronounce Mjolnir back in the day. So I'm just going to call it Mew Mew.
Nebuchadnezzar's fine, but let's dump Mjolnir. Mjolnir.
Here's the problem, Tim.
Sounds cool. Hammer also worked for me.
Hammer's badass, but our dumb American brains cannot deal with the fact that there's two consonants right next to each other. There's an M and a J. And we're like, Bejolter? I don't know. Doesn't matter.
This movie also has the Merovingianer or whatever the hell his name is.
Merovingian. Which people say, it's funny like this. You know what's funny? He says Merovingian, like you guys say stuff. I'm like, I'm supposed to know what that is? People just refer to this guy? Supposed to know who this guy is?
I like that in this movie, they're like, just call him the Frenchman.
Yeah, call him the Frenchman.
All right, cool.
If one of your friends, Paris, if one of your friends, you're hanging out with your friends, and he was like, oh, dude, I'm going to go hang out with the Merovingian. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd be like, who? Huh?
Anyway, that's a problem for the last movie. This is The Matrix Revolutions. Morpheus asks Captain Roland, this guy sucks. To search for Neo in the Matrix while Trinity and Maggie look at Bane's self-inflicted wounds and talk about how his brain waves look like he's jacked into the Matrix. Hey, that should be our first clue that something's going on. Maybe let's tie him down. Somebody tells Roland and the audience that the machines will reach Zion in less than 20 hours. The clock's still ticking, and Seraph calls them to tell them, I bring you word from the Oracle. You must come at once. Neo wakes up at an immaculate train station, which is obviously not found in San Francisco, where he meets Sati, who tells Neo he's in the wrong place. The train man won't let Neo go with him. He's like, I'll prove him wrong. And then he runs around and is like, nope, you're right. Morpheus and Trinity head to the Oracle, played now by Mary Alice, because the previous actress died. Oracle is a little, and they have a line of throwaway line there in somewhere that kind of explains it. I'm like, we all just have to.
She got a new shell, they said.
Yeah. Which actually, ironically, this might be the one movie where you can switch out an actress and have it actually kind of make sense. Because these are all just avatars, right? You're like, that makes sense.
And like, it's cool. And they cast her because the two of them played sisters in some stage play back in the day.
Oh,
and like,
that's so really cool.
Yeah. Like, cool things like that. But like, I just thought it was weird that the movie kind of like referenced the casting change twice in the same movie. Mm-hmm. Like, they kind of have the same line of dialogue. Earlier you were saying they go back to the Oracle 15 times. It's like, I feel like they don't use the times they go back to even do unique things.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. My immediate brain goes to cast a bunch of actors, and every time you go back, she looks different. But
that'd been cool.
Yeah, that would have been a cool original concept if they would have done something like that.
Like,
yeah.
I'm hiding out because they know where I am now. So every time someone turns around, it's like I'm the Oracle, and it could be totally different. Yeah. That would have been my first thought. But also, I'm having a hard enough time following the plot of these movies to begin with. So swapping actors on young Nick, probably not a smart idea. Oracle is a little bummed because she made a choice to help Neo and it had bad consequences. Now Neo is trapped in the place between the Matrix and the real world. Steven Spielberg once called this place the space between spaces, and that didn't go very well. The train man works for the Merovingian and uses his platform to smuggle programs in and out of the Matrix. Where do they go? No one knows. We'll never know. Seraph agrees to take them to the train man.
They go to the Matrix. We know that.
Where do they go when they leave the Matrix?
Where'd the parents go? Machine world. They went back to the machine world. They've got jobs.
What do they do there?
The Machine City, the little Sentinels.
What do they do? What do you, Kevin? Let's
they run programs. What are the programs doing?
What are the parents of Sati?
One regulates temperature for all the humans to make sure all the humans stay alive. Another one regulates heartbeats. Another one makes sure that storms don't go too crazy.
That's pretty cool. Does one of them recycle the urine so you have to drink your own pee?
Yes. Yes. Cool. He loves his job, by the way. He's a pervert.
Oh, my God. He loves watching it. I love that scene in Waterworld. Anyway, Seraph agrees to take them to the train man, but Morpheus isn't convinced. He should believe the Oracle. He's like, she says, I expect you to do what you've always done. Make up your own damn mind. And he goes, well, what do I need you for? And then Sati introduces Neo to her parents, who are Rama Chandra and Kamala. Rama tells Neo that he went to the Merovingian to save his daughter so she won't get deleted. He loves his daughter. Neo can't believe that programs can love, but Rama tells him love is a word used to define a connection. And we have a cool this. I like this stuff.
That's a good moment.
There's a lot of cool moments here where he's like, how do you define love? How do you define life? A lot of these things. Seraph, Morpheus, and Trinity track down the trained man, but he bolts. Rama, we go back to them, is bummed he has to leave his daughter in the care of the Oracle, but that's karma. And then he's like, well, you believe in karma? He's like, well, karma, again, just another word, like love, a way of saying, what am I supposed to do here? Or rather, what am I here to do, i.e. purpose? And purpose, you know, is one of the themes that comes up a lot in The Matrix. And Neo's like, cool. Like
using that same line twice, like, lessened it for me.
A little bit. Like, we didn't need it both.
Yeah, we didn't need both. The first time it was good. It hit hard.
He could have just been like, I love my daughter, and that gives me purpose. And you're like, okay, that's cool. The train pulls in, and Neo tries to get on board, but gets denied. And the train man says, down here, I make the rules. Down here, I make the threats. Down here.
And then for a moment, you're like, oh, Neo's about to beat the shit out. And then he's like, nope, he just beats Neo, and then that's it. Ass. And it's like, but surely Neo can get out somehow, right? He's the one. And nope.
So I mean, this like literally contradicts the first movie in this one, because you almost think like with the construct and when Morpheus took Neo to where the woman in the red dress was as a simulation, all of this is based off the same code, right? Neo is now, he's literally the one, he can see the code. You know, some rules can be bent, others can be broken. Okay. So why would he be powerless in the quote unquote train man station? Like I said, again, lazy writing. They had to depower Superman, so in this place it's kryptonite, right? Just mm-hmm. makes no sense to me.
My guess is that the Matrix is running off a PC, and that this little train
he's in Linux
is running off of the Nintendo Switch. Yeah. Which, by the way, borked on me not once, not twice, but three times today while we were playing Mario Party. I digress. Seraph wants to go back to the Oracle for her help, but Trinity knows what has to be done. We got to go to the Merovingian. Neo runs around in circles and then says, shit. Because he can't get out.
He does. It's so weird. It's so goofy.
Oh, I'll say this to speak positively about a couple of things here. Love the design of the train station. Love the design of what Neo's wearing. They kind of like melded sort of what he wore in the first one and the second one here. Yeah. I think it's cool. I like the fabric of it. And
Nick,
you know,
why did you like the train station? Because it looks like a BART train station that's clean. We've never seen that, you know?
Right, exactly. It's fascinating to me. If you're going to make exactly, Kevin, if you're going to spend $200 million on a movie, you got to show me something I've never seen before. And this train station, a clean train station, is like, Paris, mind blown. Seraph and the gang head to the Merovingian to
fuck some shit. As they're going there, when they're doing the run, you could see an advertisement for Tasty Wheat. In the background, in the train, or not in the train station. Well, yeah, in the train station that Morpheus and them are running through.
Right, they're chasing them. Yeah,
yeah. Tasty Wheat's the thing that Mouser was talking about in the first one.
Oh, yeah, interesting. We get a cool sequence here where they go into the club. They shoot their way into the club, and Trinity does that cool crane spinning kick with bullet time that she did in the very first movie, and then just clanks someone.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually absolutely hated this whole scene because, again, it's lazy. You're just rinse and repeat doing the same thing, which was way cooler in the first one.
And I thought the anti-grab stuff was cool, but they never did anything cool with it. Like that, I liked when we kind of got the jumping up and then jumping off the walls, like where it's like it felt like they were simultaneously in control of their motion, but it wasn't a one for one of just they're on the roof now. It was kind of like floating through space, but get some cool choreography going here. And for it to end with just a redux of the Trinity thing, that's bad fan service. That's bad callbacks.
I wish that when they had died, like the bodies and they fall like normal. I wish they had fallen like with the appropriate gravity. Because I feel like that would leave it looking cool and like being like, oh, these programs are different.
Well, here's the deal. You guys asked for something new. You got it. Be careful what you ask for, because you might get Trinity, Morpheus, and Seraph back to back to back walking down the stairs of a club. And the looks people give them, like, what are you doing? You don't need to do this.
Yeah, we're here to party, dude. Right, come on.
We're just,
love here.
I just did Coke and Molly in the bathroom. And you're looking at me right now, bro. I am not equalized out.
You see the, Nick, do you see the one guy that had a, just a, like a vinyl shirt that was totally transparent with just the nipples?
Yeah, did you see the guy getting his nipples just pulled?
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in the scene. But when they're running into this and they jump the turnstile, when the train man like kind of like bumbles through the like Mark Wahlberg style, like through the turnstile, and then our three heroes kind of go and like one by one try to one up each other of how they get over it, and Trinity just does this like cartwheel thing, because like she just moves in cartwheels, you know? It's like, that's her thing.
She communicates in cartwheels. When the train guy gets away from them, like he leaps in front of a train, right, to create like a wall, but like they could have just jumped over it, like there's a cut, like the you can see there's space above it, so they could have just been like you know,
they right just up, jump.
They were like trains, that's Neo's much. Thing
yeah
that's
yeah.
Neo's thing. They walk downstairs back to back to back, and then the Mayor of Engine, and this is why I put a note in here. We've gone past this joke already, guys, but I love this joke so much, I'm going to say it anyway. And this is how I always want to walk with Tim everywhere we go, back to back.
I'm down.
Army of Two style. Mayor of Engine gives him a safe passage so they can make a deal. He wants the eyes of the Oracle in exchange for Neo, and then he talks a lot. So Trinity tells him, I don't have time for this shit, and pulls a gun on him. And it's like, oh, I guess we're just to the scene. Now, having to go kill the Oracle and take her eyes to give to the Merovingian is brutal, but kind of fucking an interesting idea. I'm like, oh, shit, how are they going to get themselves out of this one? And then Trinity just pulls a gun on him, to which the Merovingian should have said, if you kill me, you will never get Neo.
Exactly.
I'm the only person that can give you Neo.
Exactly.
So we're at a stalemate right now. You pulling a gun on me has no gravity whatsoever. You have no leverage. Pull the trigger. He's lost forever.
And Persephone gets one line, she's in love. And I was like, oh, God.
Monica Bellucci showed up for 15 minutes. Yeah. And they were like, here you go. Here's $1 million.
Here, wear something revealing and you get one line. That's it.
Poor Monica Bellucci. Anyway, so ladies, good, screenwriting.
Poor Monica Bellucci.
I mean, because here's the thing. Poor everyone in this movie, right? Monica Bellucci is a...
for the kid.
The kid crushed it. But Monica Bellucci is a great actor. She has great screen presence, thoroughly underutilized in this series altogether. Why do you put so many people in your movie if this is what you're going to do with them, right?
Like, have cool looking people all over the place.
We don't, like, I don't, you guys probably, like, Monica Bellucci is not that big in America, but she's a, from what I understand, in Italy, she's a hugely big celebrity. And so, like, you have her in this, and obviously she can hold the scene. Do something with her.
Well,
right?
See, you actually bring up another great point. I meant to bring this up during Reload It, but I think it's relevant here. I also feel like they did a lot of celebrity stunt casting in this. Roy Jones Jr. had no business being in anything with The Matrix at all. They were going to have Aaliyah in it. So you replace Aaliyah with Marvin Gaye's daughter. It's just things like that. You know what I mean? You talk about Monica Bellucci. There's some good acting in here, and then there's some absolutely terrible acting. And I know some of the other characters in here were pretty big in like New Zealand and Australia as well. But like you said, even the ones that had like this great talent, like again, his last name's Lambert, the Merovingian guy, he's a big actor, you know, like in France and everything.
Yeah.
Underutilized completely, you know, so it's just a shame.
One scene.
But before we get back to the plot, let me tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. Of course, anybody that listens to this show knows that I absolutely love MeUndies, and you will rarely see me not wearing multiple articles of MeUndies clothing at any given time. Even right now, I got the shirt, I got the lounge pants, I got the undies, and I got the socks, because I love covering myself in that soft micromodal fabric. You can get your festive on with the new MeUndies Holiday Collection, featuring classic plaids you know and love, and sweater-inspired prints that will quickly become favorites. Their undies, loungewear, and sleepwear are made out of soft, breathable, stretchy fabrics that are ideal for sitting fireside with loved ones and a cup of hot cocoa. You can get the family photo you've always dreamed of with matching PJ sets. They're available in sizes extra small through 4XL, and MeUndies has a little something for everyone on your list. MeUndies has a great offer for you. First-time purchasers can get 15% off and free shipping. Your days of fighting for your life in the mall parking lot are over. To get 15% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. Next up, shout out to Trade Coffee. Whether you're a coffee nerd or a coffee newbie, you need to hear about Trade Coffee. They want to make every cup of coffee your best ever. Trade matches you to a selection of their over 400 craft coffees, all based on how you answer their coffee quiz. They consider whether you like French press, auto brew, or even cold brew, and pair you with the perfect choice. And if you don't love it, they'll replace it with a different bag for free. Trade Coffee is awesome. It's really fun to do the quiz and, you know, just kind of learn a little bit more about the wild world of coffee that's out there. For you guys right now, Trade is offering your first bag free and $5 off your bundle at checkout. To get yours, go to drinktrade.com/kindoffunny and use promo code kindoffunny. Take the quiz to start your journey to the perfect cup. That's drinktrade.com/kindoffunny. Promo code kindoffunny for your first bag free and $5 off your bundle. And this holiday season, give the coffee lover in your life the gift of better coffee too. Again, that's drinktrade.com/kindoffunny. Promo code kindoffunny. Next up, shout out to Audible. This episode is sponsored by Audible, and I bet you have discerning taste and you're always looking for something new to listen to. Well, you should check out Andy Weir's Project Hail Mary on Audible. It's an interstellar science-based thriller from the best-selling author of The Martian that's skillfully performed by Ray Porter, who brings the already gripping tale to life with vibrant and witty narration. In it, a lone astronaut must save the Earth from disaster in an epic tale of discovery, speculation, and survival. It's part scientific mystery, part intergalactic journey, and all edge of your seat entertainment. This Audible Studios production of Project Hail Mary is a number one New York Times audio bestseller and continues to top Audible's bestseller charts and garner rave listener reviews. You don't want to miss this. Listeners are already calling it. It's the highest order of geekgasm metal. You can go to audible.com/Project Hail Mary and listen now. That's audible.com/Project Hail Mary. Finally, shout out to HBO Max. Tis the season to discover exclusive originals, addictive series, and award-winning performances. And you can get into the holiday spirit with Max originals like 8-Bit Christmas, a stop-motion animation extravaganza. Or if classics are more your speed, they have you covered there too with Elf, Miracle on 34th Street, The Polar Express, Gremlins. Of course, that's a Christmas movie. And if you haven't seen it in a while, it's hilarious. So go check it out. Who could have forgot everyone's favorite, A Christmas Story? HBO Max is the streaming home of over 13,000 hours of addictive series, blockbuster movies, and exclusive originals. Turn binge-worthy watching new favorites into your next holiday tradition. You guys, I've been loving HBO Max. I've been loving it a lot. There's so much fun stuff to watch, whether it's reality shows like F-Boy Island or the upcoming Matrix Revolutions. Get hyped. I can't wait to see it. Visit hbo.ax/kfdec to start streaming on your favorite devices today. That's hbo.ax/kfdec to start streaming on your favorite devices today. It's a kind of funny December. KFDEC. Check it out. Go for it, Nick.
Meanwhile, Neo tries to meditate his way out of the train station. Thankfully, Trinity has a lot more resources than him.
Work. He's an idiot.
She's a lot more resourceful. She saves him, and they make out. But Neo,
Can I pause right there? I'm the train man. Deuces, leaving all of you right there. I'm out. Now get out. I win.
Now you're all trapped. Now you're all trapped.
Great point.
But Neo is like, I can't leave yet. I have to go back to the Oracle yet again. When he gets there, of course, I don't know. When he gets there, of course.
At one point, sorry, real quick, Seraph calls. Why didn't they just pass the phone to the Oracle?
Thank you. That's what I'm saying. Why do you, because I think I said this on the last episode. You clearly don't need to be in the Matrix to talk to the Oracle because obviously they pick up a phone and call you.
Yeah. We figured this out.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to have something for people to do. Then he goes over there. When he gets there, he sees Sati making cookies. She is safe and sound with the Oracle. And I was just like, man, I want cookies. But the Oracle can't really help Neo. She can't see beyond the choices she doesn't understand. Neo's like, ugh. He's kind of PO'd. He wants to know why she didn't tell him about the architect, but he wasn't ready. He wants to know what's happening to him. And she's like, I have no answers for you. But she says the power of the one extends beyond this world. It reaches all the way from here to the source. And he's like, okay, well, that doesn't help. The architect said that Neo will be dead by midnight, but his sole purpose is to balance the equation. The Oracle's purpose is to unbalance it, to end the war. And then he asks, can Zion be saved? And she says, if there's an answer, there's only one place you're going to find it. And if you can't find it, we're all screwed. And he's like, and then she says, everything that has a beginning has an end. Smith is Neo's opposite, is negative, and he'll destroy everything. We get a lot of exposition in the scene. Smith wakes up, of course. Then we cut back over to him in Bane's body, and Neo wakes up back in his. The Oracle gives Sati some cookies and sends her on her way with Seraph, but it's too late. The agents have found them. Okay, and then we get this scene.
Oh, Christ, we get this scene. We get to see where Agent Smith throws a bowl of cookie dough against the wall. He's like, why did you make the cookies if you knew I was going to throw them? But if you didn't know I was going to throw them, how did you make the cookies? What are the cookies? It's like, oh, my God. Poor Hugo Weaving's
they
gave him like two lines of dialogue but in a stack of pages. And they were like, can you just do some stuff here? Like, he sounds like a lunatic in all of these scenes from here on out.
I will say, though, one of my favorite lines just from the confrontation with the Oracle is when he throws the cookie and he's like, maybe you put it, maybe you didn't, it's just the way he says it is so good. I did love that part.
It's well acted regardless of the fact that the lines that they're reading are so terrible.
Oh, man. Anyway, Smith punches into her arm and then Goozer and then changes into her, into one of them. But this one's different. This one takes his glasses off and laughs maniacally. Ah, ha, 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 ha. And you're like, oh, no, he's smarter now. Bane talks exactly like Smith. And if I were in the real world, I'd be like, why do you sound like Agent Smith?
Yeah.
What is going on?
But can we pause going back to him assimilating the Oracle, so to speak? So that is him, quote unquote, getting the eyes of the Oracle. So he's laughing maniacally because he wins. He sees that he wins. So that's him gloating because now he can see into the future that he's going to get Neo and he wins.
Right. But then couldn't he see past that when he watched?
But remember, you can't see past the choices that you don't understand.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to defend it as best I can. Yeah. But it's hard.
It's one of those really things where this is always the problem with like prophecies, right?
Yeah.
And premonition and all that stuff is it's just like time travel. You're like, this starts to get really, 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 really like hazy quickly here.
Well, on top of that, this movie's doesn't only feature a character that knows the future, also features characters that can literally rewrite the rules of reality. Like that, it gets so complicated because like to Kevin's point of like, why didn't they just jump over the train? It's like, that is such a good question. And I hate that the answer is it's a movie. Like that's the only answer.
Right. Back in the real world, Bane questions who he is. He's like, if I'm not me, then who am I? It's like, again, you sound like fucking Smith. You're Smith. Roland gets the word that they found the Lagos and they head over to it, even though it could be a trap. Quote, you can put that shit away, boys. All she needs is a jump start, is what Jada Pinkett Smith says when she comes around the corner and she's like, I need a little bit of help. Morpheus, of course, is happy to see Niobe. Why? Because we've had one scene prior in this movie, maybe two, where they have some level of a relationship, we're told that they do. And again, God bless Jada Pinkett Smith and Lawrence Fishburne. They're doing their best.
Yes.
But you have no backstory for these characters whatsoever. And they're trying every ounce of their acting ability to get audiences to care about this relationship. And I just patently do not.
How did the Lago survive?
I don't know. Cause I can't remember.
I want to say that is in Enter the Matrix. I can't remember 100%, but it's explained in there.
Okay. That actually makes sense. Yeah.
Right. Morpheus is happy to see Niobe. He apologizes for dragging her into this mess, but Niobe is like, oh, don't worry about it. I conferred with the Oracle and heard exactly what I needed to hear. He's like, when? We were there five times. We were literally there every hour on the hour today. When were you there? And she's like, I don't know, man. Enter the Matrix.
Pretty much.
Locke has a plan to stop the Sentinels. Now, here's what I'm going to say about this, guys. Mm-hmm. When I first watched these movies, I was like, I pretty much don't like any of these characters. Watching it back, I'm like,
fuck.
Poor Locke. Locke was the only person that's like, I have a legitimate plan to at least try and save some of us. And the council's like, we're going to put it in Neo's hands. And he's like, no, don't put it in Neo's hands. Like, we have ammo. We could just kill these things as they come in. Like, come on. We believe.
Should have kept a couple ships, though.
Just to maybe escape. I don't know. Yeah, maybe go to another city. Maybe don't put all your eggs in one Zion. Maybe have multiple Zions. I don't know. I digress. Poor Locke. Poor Locke is just like, guys, it's like when I make decisions where I'm like, and then Tim's like, nah, dude, we're going to do it the other way. And I'm like, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
Locke wants to put a gun in his hand, every man, woman, and child, and march them over to the dock. And he says, hope, and they're like, well, we hope you're wrong. And then he says, hope is an indulgence I don't have time for. And I'm like, that's a bad.
Hell yeah. Fuck yeah, it is.
That is fucking sick. And also that, I forget the actor's name, but he's great in this.
Harry Lennox.
Thank you. Cass comes in and finds Z making shells, and Z tells her she volunteered to hold the dock. And she's like, why would you do that? He goes, because I love him. I love him the same as he loves me. And if I were out there and he were here, I know what he'd do. And then she says, if it was Dozer, and you know the only chance he had of seeing him again was to hold that dock, what would you do? And then Cass says, make shells. It's a good little scene. I like this scene. Not necessary, but a good scene. The kid, of course, has volunteered to hold the dock as well. And part of me hopes he just eats it right off the bat when I first saw. I hope he just gets a shell right to the face. Niobe, Roland, and Morpheus strategize how to sneak past the machines. And Niobe volunteers to pilot the ship through a very dangerous mechanical power line. Neo tells them he knows what he has to do. He has to take one of the ships and go to Machine City. Now, I'll tell you this right now. Machine City... that's a badass fucking name for a city.
It's fucking cool.
That's badass. If I was like, guys, we're getting the car, we're going to Machine City, you'd be like, oh, we're going to do some drugs tonight. Anyway, Niobe volunteers to give Neo her ship, the Lagos. Meanwhile, Maggie gets a scalpel to the gut because Bane is obviously the bad guy and no one can see that. Neo tells Trinity he's probably not coming back, but she already knows and is going to come with him regardless. Quote, I'll tell you something. 6 hours ago, I told the Merovingian I was willing to give anything and everything for you. Do you know what's changed in the last 6 hours?
What?
Nothing.
Mm. Whoa.
Shit.
Awesome. Neo and Morpheus say goodbye, and Neo tells him it's been an honor, sir. And I like this part. And then he says, no, the honor has been mine. And he calls him sir. And I like that. Neo's like, respect. Pay respect where respect is due. Roland, Niobe, and Mauser watch as Neo and Trinity head off in the Lagos. A fuse bursts, so Trinity heads down to check it out. And guess what? Bum, bum, bum. Bane attacks her, and he sounds exactly like Smith, but nobody could figure this out yet. He also forgot who he was messing with because Trinity fucks his shit up at first and then warns Neo before getting knocked out. Roland makes the decision to stay the course. If Bane already got to them, by this point they figured out that Bane is Smith. If Bane already got to them, of course, he's in control of another EMP, and they can't risk taking both ships out at once. So they have to keep going over back to Zion. Over on the Logos, Bane holds Trinity hostage. Bane gets the better of Neo and holds a gun to his face. But then Bane tells Neo who really is, while Trinity frees herself downstairs. And he says, look past the flesh and see your enemy. Yes, Mr. Anderson. And he was like, first off, if you call me Mr. Anderson, I know you're Smith. You're the only asshole that calls me Mr. Anderson. It's like when Kevin called me Nicholas. There's nowhere I can't go. There's nowhere I won't find you. And then Trinity pops a fuse and the lights go out. Neo jumps on Bane and they fight while the electricity goes all bonkers. And then Neo starts to just choke Bane out. And then Bane grabs the end of a split electrical line and burns his eyes shut. Mm. Blinded, Neo follows Bane's voice. He calls him the blind messiah. You're a symbol for all of your kind, Mr. Anderson. Helpless, pathetic. Just waiting to be put out of your misery. And then Bane takes a swing at Neo, and then Neo ducks it, and he goes, I can see you. And it's like, really? And
that then we line, see
Neo. Yeah.
That line delivery, I fucking love. Because I feel like he just nailed the, like, you know, Keanu Reeves of, like, oh, I can see. And it's like, and then we see it, and it's just like, whoa, that's a cool moment. This is one of the few moments where I'm like, all right, I'll take it.
No, I could not disagree more.
Tim's gone. The thing that you have to realize, guys, about Keanu Reeves' acting ability is that it is one note, but it's a glorious note.
It is. It is. Really
but,
is.
But the problem is that note needs to be written around and set up and supported so that and his dumb goofiness is backed up with something really fucking cool. And this is just like, it should have been cool. The idea of I can see now needs to be followed up with something incredible that we haven't seen before. Instead, it's followed up with a lesser than version of what we've seen before.
Mm-hmm. But of course, then Neo, what he does see, of course, is Agent Smith with the sunglasses bathed in like a golden energy and light. And then he takes the crowbar and apparently knocks his head clean off. And I'm like, was that what happened in real life, or did you just hit him? And I don't know.
Either way, that
was fire vision.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
I was like, dude, show him in real life.
If I was Trinity and I came back up and saw him do his head off, I'd be like, whoa, man, you got to back that down like 10%. Neo frees Trinity and tells him that his eyes are okay, but I think you're going to have to drive. Fun little line there. Locke commands his APUs into position as all of Zion prepares for the onslaught. And this is where we get sort of the glow up of Captain Mifune, who gives a hell of a speech and says, if it's our time to die, it's our time to die. All I ask is we give them hell before we
what
do.
We do. Yeah.
Badass. And this guy's great too. Z makes a deal with Shara. She says, you keep moving, I'll keep shooting. So now they have their little RPG crew we're going to see here. Niobe and the crew head into the mechanical tunnel and accidentally awaken the Sentinels. Ghost mans the gun and Morpheus takes the co-pilot seat. We get a little Star Wars here. Niobe drops them into the tunnel hard with the squids in tow. All of this looks pretty good, actually. It was one of those things where I looked back, I'm like, oh, the CG here, not too terrible. Yeah. Kind of enjoying this little ride.
I'm with you that the CG of the ghost stuff and like the ship stuff is cool. And it has been cool in the other movies as well. I think that they created a really good world and art style and committed to it. But I think the CG is worst in this movie overall because of the amount of time they focus on the mech suits. And I have been making excuses, but they're not excuses. It's explanations for why things look the way they do in Matrix 1 and 2, because in the Matrix, things look that way. They're in the real world and it looks bad when they're doing the mech fight stuff. And like, that's kind of the biggest disappointment, because it is the mech fight scene that we're about to get to, that we're kind of already in the beginnings of, is the worst looking shit that we have in any of these movies. And it's so long and focused on of like, it is essentially the Bruce Banner Hulk Infinity War moment, but for 50 minutes.
And it's weird because, and we'll get to it here, but one of the things that we're in this scene for so long, your subconscious has time to tell your conscious, like, there's no freaking way these APUs would be able to withstand this massive, infinite swarm of Sentinels for longer than, like, 4 minutes before they just got overcome. Like, we see come at Mifune and just destroy him in a second.
The Sentinels are programmed to do as little damage as possible because they, like, Mifune gets messed up, but, like, they didn't need to use 800 sentinels to do that. You know what I mean? Like, he's all screwed up, and it's like one sentinel could have done that easily.
Right.
Or, you know, it's so overwhelming.
If they didn't do all that, they wouldn't be able to say the line, he's pissing bullets.
oh, by the way, I wanted to point out, this is why I said all this.
He's pissing metal, is what he said.
I had to look up the names of the ships, and this is kind of the first time that I actually looked at the design of the ship, because they have like schematics when you Google like the Mjolnir, the hammer, whatever. Yeah. And I like that design. I think they're pretty cool looking as far as like hover ships are concerned. Anyway, Mifune watches and the team watch as the walls above him begin to crack, and then one massive digger breaches the dock and falls to the ground, and Mifune yells, "Knuckle up." Which is what I'm saying when we drink from now on. They start blasting, and this shot is actually kind of awesome, man. As the wave comes through, they're just blasting, blasting, blasting. When I first watched this, I just thought they were going to blast, 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 and the wave was just going to come through and just destroy all the APUs because they're slow moving, but they did not. Let's see. That digger starts to reorient itself while an RPG team sneaks up on it. Z and Shara blow one of its legs off, but it's not enough. It reorients itself and keeps digging. The kid waits in a holding deck while another volunteer runs out to reload the APU, and he's like, soon it's going to be my time. Then a massive swarm of squids comes through the hole, and not even the massive turrets surrounding the bridge can stop the swarm from decimating it. Locke orders the RPG units to get the job done. They fire two more rounds, but the squids get, I liked how the squids are just like sacrificing themselves to protect this massive machine that's digging. They bolt as the machine goes down just in time for another one to breach the dock. It was all for nothing. Niobe pilots the hammer while the team shoots their heart out, but the squids manage to take out their radio so they can't signal back who they are or what's going on. Z and Shara sneak up on the second machine and take another shot, but which gets parried by the squids again. More chase them into the tunnels, and then Shara gets taken out.
Ripped apart. Just violently.
Eviscerated. Yeah. Locke spots a ship coming through the mechanical line, and he thinks it's a trick. He's like, no pilot could possibly pilot that mechanical line. But the bridge confirms, sir, it's the hammer. And then if they pop that EMT in here, we'll lose the dock. And then someone turns to him and says, bro.
the dock's gone, bro.
Like, that thing's gone. And so Locke authorizes the ground team to open the gate to let the hammer in. But there's only one problem. The controls have gone all borked. We got to do this old analog way. Squids crawl through every tunnel, utterly gutting everything in their sight. Locke calls Mifune, the last standing APU closest to the gate. He calls for, he's like, you got to take this thing out. So he calls for a reload. And guess what? The kid is up. He runs over with some new caissons of ammo, but the swarm overruns them, causing one of the mags to jam. So the kid climbs up and starts kicking the dang thing just in time for Mifune to unleash a barrage of hellfire on the upcoming swarm. But it's too late. They carve him up like a Christmas roast. Mifune tells
I like this scene. I like as a scene. I don't really like that it's these characters doing it, and I don't necessarily even like it in this movie. But I like the scene of the door opening. It's like, reload nine. And it is like, do not go out there. It is very scary. And I think it's well shot to like give us that like level of fear and tension for characters that, quite frankly, we not only don't care about, like, we actively kind of want to die.
Like, if the kid ran out and somebody just stomped him, I'd be like, yeah, I got my money's worth today. Yeah. Thanks, Warner Brothers. Let's see. Mifune tells the kid the hammer is coming. He has to open the gate. And then as he's dying, and he says, Captain, I didn't finish the training program. And Mifune says, neither did I. And the kid's like, well, you're lying there dead. Yeah. So it's not a good example for me.
Maybe you should have, bro.
Maybe you should have changed. Everyone, so, did everyone not change? Did everyone not finish the program? Like, because they're all dead.
Is it just me, or was that one of the most violent death scenes we've ever seen on camera? Like, his face getting ripped apart. I'm like, oh my God. Like, you could have handled this with an explosion or like just a hit. Or no, but you wanted to show that.
But again, it would have made more sense as an attack plan if one of them just landed on him, like the squids, and just and pulled his heart out. It would have been way cooler. Instead, they all like, and then like, I guess some of them are slapping him around.
You have to think for machines that like can fly and have multiple arms, all they'd have to do is just get on the back one of his APUs. And they're like, we're pretty much done. This is end game right here.
Yeah, but you can't do anything.
Makes for a cool visual as they swarm through and like cut him. Anyway, let's see. The kid sets off in Mifune's APU, and man, it just looks silly. They did not do this kid. This kid is like, oh, I hate him already, but when he gets in this thing, he's jerking around like he doesn't know what the heck's going on. And the CG's so bad here that it almost makes me laugh out loud when I'm watching it. It doesn't help the kid's like talking himself through this stuff. Whatever. Let's see. Locke calls to Mifune. He says, I don't know if you can hear me, but the hammer is 2 minutes away. You got 2 minutes to get that gate open. Z overhears this on the radio and knows Link is coming. The kid takes aim at the massive chain holding the door in place, but gets knocked over. Thankfully, Z comes to his rescue with one of those electro guns and kills the sentinel and says, do it, kid. And then he... And then
It's coming. It's coming.
I know this is a line from your cool Animatrix movie, but... Man, if you haven't seen that, this line hits the wrong way. He looks at the chain as he takes aim and says, Neo, I believe. And I remember, I might be making this up, but I remember an audible groan going through the theater when I watched this. Like, whoa, God.
I don't think you're making it up. I'm pretty sure even back then everyone was like, ugh.
Yeah.
This kid. Anyway, opens fire and bursts the chain open as the hammer comes through. Crash lands. Morpheus orders Link to burn it, and Link pops the EMP, taking out every squid in range. Morpheus tells us Niobe she's a hell of a pilot, and then she says some things in the world never change, but some things do. Luckily, some things do. And it's like, I think they're going to make out now. That's cool. Link and Z link up.
See that's for Locke, man.
That was
a bad day for Locke.
Yeah, the Locke is like, guys, you didn't do anything. Link wore the necklace she gave him. He said, are you kidding me? I'm never going to take this dang thing off. Link tells the crew that they're screwed. Or Locke, of course, comes up and is like, hey, guess what, guys? Good news and bad news. Good news is you're all here. Bad news is that little trick you just pulled basically nuked all of our defenses. So we're pretty screwed right now. Like, I really wish you hadn't. Defenses. We had something else. Yeah, well.
I wish someone had been like, what do we have? What do we have? All the APUs are fucked up. We're cutting the guns off in an attempt to maybe use that by hand, perhaps. I don't know. That seems fucking unsafe.
Fair enough. He says, if I were the machines, I'd send every Sentinel I could right now.
They were already doing that.
Yeah. So he orders everyone to fall back and seal the shaft. They've got incoming on the dock. They blow the dock, and then Locke looks up and goes, "Your move." I got it. Sorry. Let me rephrase that. They blow everything, and there's a moment of quietness, and Locke looks up at the sky and says, "Your move."
This fucking movie, man. I love it. Honestly, this was one of the movies that we've done hundreds of movies in review. I think I enjoyed watching this one less than some of the worst movies we ever watched. It was joyless.
I don't know. It's still better than Catwoman.
Reloaded. I had joy watching that for how bad it was. This had nothing for me.
Because it's not a "it's so bad it's good." Yeah. It's just one bad. Of those, damn, this should have been so much better than it is. That was just my feeling.
They had it all. Niobe, Morpheus, and Roland up to the council. Neo is doing what he believes he must do. And they say, "I know as long as there is a single," and Morpheus says, "I know as long as there is a single breath in his body, he will not give up, and neither can we." Trinity and Neo head up to the surface where they see the fields of humans. It's a haunting sight. Very cool. Neo can see it all. He tells Trinity to head to the power lines at the right, which should give them a path through. Locke tells the council that machines will breach the city wall in 2 hours. He wants everyone in the hole to hole up in the temple. Or he orders his men to fortify it so they can make their last stand there. And it's very sad because they're not going to make it. Trinity and Neo head toward the mountains. And he says, she says, "If you tell me we'll make it, I'll believe you." And Neo says, "We'll make it. We have to." And then a row of massive machines unfurl and start shooting sentinels at him. And she's like, "Are you sure? Are you sure about what he's
saying?" Pause right here on this. Sure. Pause right here on this. So this goes back to what I was saying even at the beginning. There was such a great opportunity when they basically come to the surface and they see the fields. Like, they should slowly have gone through just the fields of pods, and you have this moment. So we get this visual of just how the scope of how many people are just locked into these pods going into the Matrix. And then I have to also say, why do the machines have this big line of defense at the mountains right now, where clearly they were already ready to go if someone was coming? Where's that threat coming from?
I think this giant, like those giant like robots, they're all around the city. I would imagine that's a perimeter around the city.
Yeah, because it kind of shows them powering up a little bit and then unfurling and then start shooting sentinels. So I imagine those are like their sentry guns. But also, they are mounting a final attack against the one human.
That's what I'm thinking. Aren't they a little busy right now?
Yeah, but I mean, it's not. I played that off as like, what if the humans launch a counterattack of some sort? We'll be ready for them. Yeah. But also, it's like, this is like the time in like the real time strategy game where like it's the first level and you're just dominating so much. You're just like, let's just keep making resources. This feels good because I know in about 3 levels I'm gonna have to quit this game. It's too fucking hard. That's why I've never beat an Advance Wars. Let's see. They start shooting sentinels at people, and then Neo's like, he puts out his hand and he nukes all of them. But there's too many this time. They can't be beat. So Neo tells Trinity, he's like, "You gotta take the logos up." And then they go into the cloud coverage, and everything gets electrocuted as Trinity breaks through the clouds and sees the sun for the first time in her life. And she says, "Beautiful." And then they fall with a dead stick to the ground. The logo plummets toward the ground. Neo tells Trinity to pump the igniter. "Oh, but go slower. Pump it slower." And then she does slow it. And goes, "God." Now. And she fires it off, and they crash land in a machine tower.
I thought it was kind of cool them breaking through the clouds. Like, this is one of the rare moments, and man, to call it a moment isn't even right because it is a brief second. But it is something that's unique that we haven't seen yet in these movies. And I was like, oh shit, this kind of just widens the world a little bit more in a way that's kind of cool. But there's not much there. It's just a cool visual.
It's a cool visual.
Yep.
Until you stop to think about it for a second. Now, Paris, I know what you're going to say. You're going to have all sorts of facts and stuff about this movie that I'm not even thinking about right now. But the concept was the machines run off of solar power.
Right.
If we black out the sky, they will no longer be able to run off of solar power. But then this ship just flies above the cloud coverage fairly easily, I might add.
Right. And
granted, it gets electrocuted.
A hovercraft. Like, okay, let's remember, it's a hovercraft, not a flying ship. So that's an interesting thing, too.
So these are really good points.
We think to ourselves, maybe if we just shielded this in some sort of Faraday cage so that when the electricity hit it, it would just go around it. Kevin, I know you're impressed. I remember that word. Mm-hmm. Maybe it could just go up. We could just tether a big antenna up there, get all the solar power we need, and then not have to deal with these human beings at all.
Yeah, because doesn't the architect even say, and I think I'm going to screw it up a little bit. He says something in, at the end of Reloaded, there's level of survival we're willing to accept.
Yes.
So clearly they could, even if they didn't have the humans, right, there's some type of power source that they could at least survive. But I agree with you, to see that hovercraft go up there, and like you're saying, even though it's obviously it's getting shorted out because they darken the sky, we're talking centuries at this point. The machines have been at this. You think they would have figured something out by now? Already. Yeah.
Also, the machines at this point, it's like, what's the end goal of the machines? Is it just to keep replicating? Because wouldn't by that point one machine be fine?
This is why I'm saying we needed time in the machine city. Yeah. We needed to understand their motivations and why they're doing what they're doing. Yeah.
I have an amazing PC that Tim bought me sitting right below this desk. It doesn't want to be multiple PCs. It's like, I'm fine. I'm just a PC. I'm good. I got an RTX 3090 in me. Yeah. And smoke pools. I can smoke
pools. I like the idea that it does want to be multiple PCs.
Not after the stuff it seemed to do. All right.
That's enough.
All right. You know what? That's a Nick 1.0 joke, guys. And Paris is on this show. He elevates the show. So I'd like to dial that back. Kevin, please edit that out. Please edit that out. Anyway. Let's see.
Where were we?
Let's see. We crashed me into the tower.
I've edited videos for like 4 years.
I know, but in my brain, it makes me feel better. That's how I sleep at night. Neo calls out for Trinity, who was lying on the ground, and he says, "We've made it. You said we would, and we made it." And he says, "It's unbelievable. Light everywhere. Like the whole thing is built of light." And she says, "You've already shown me so much. I can't go with you, Neo. I've had a billion." She's like, "This is a really touching scene, Kevin. Okay, it's really touching. I don't want you to ruin this for me, right?" The Trinity is there. And she's a little sleepy. She says, "You've already shown me so much. I can't go with you, Neo. I have a billion wrought iron rods sticking out of me." And then the camera cuts out, and there is a comical amount of like iron rods sticking
There's
out.
There's like six.
It's so many.
Yeah.
Dude, you're so right. It is so ridiculous. And I don't know if it's actually 15 minutes, but this feels like it goes on 15 minutes.
Yeah,
she just
drags.
Keeps talking with, and I swear, like the more you watch, like Kevin says, there's six, but I swear to God, every camera cut they add one more. Like it just like keeps going. It's fucking ridiculous.
It's a long scene, and I like Carrie Ann Moss, so it's sad for me. But I thought I'm also like we could rush this a little bit. Anyway, he says, "Trinity, you can't die. You can't." She says, "Yes, I can. You brought me back once, but not this time. Do you remember on that roof after you caught me? The last thing you said," he says, "Yeah, I'm sorry." She says, "I wish I hadn't said I was sorry. I wish my last thought, one more chance." She's like, "I wish I had one more chance to tell you what really mattered, to say how much I loved you, how grateful I was for every moment I had with you. But you brought me back. You gave me my wish. One more chance to say what I really wanted to say, which is kiss me, one more kiss me." And he kisses her. And then she's like, "Also, maybe take one or two of these wrought iron rods out of my
head." Yeah.
Really beautiful. Okay. Anyway, Trinity dies and Neo cries over her body. More of the big digging machines break through the dock, and Link prays for Neo to hurry the hell up. Neo finds his way to the machine city as little robots follow him. Again, this is cool. This is different. Little tiny robots that are these little lobster-looking spider things walking behind him. They're obviously service robots, right? Fixing stuff, going through the canals, doing all that stuff. And they're following him. They're not attacking him. They're just like, "What's this guy doing? He's got the glow." They all scatter, of course. When a mass of that is a Last Dragon reference. And if you guys understand that,
I did.
You're my friend. You'll be my friend. They all scatter as a massive spiky robot squares off against him and forms a big old baby face. This thing I don't care what you guys say. This thing looks cool as shit. The spikes, it looks like a big...
you like the baby face on Do
Esme? I didn't know it was a baby face until you guys
It literally
said,
is.
Yeah,
It's one of their nephew's faces.
Oh, that's weird. No, I just like the back of it. I think it looks like a... What are those little blowfish? Like a blowfish that have little...
Yeah,
puffer fish. Yeah,
blowfish. It looks like a porcupine. Not a porcupine.
Porky.
Yeah, maybe. What?
Porcupine.
What is it? What did I... How do you say it?
Porcupine, but... Porcupine.
Yeah, porky, you know what I mean?
Sure. Anyway, Neo squares off against this thing, and he says, "Dormammu, I've come to bargain."
Yeah.
And they can't stop Smith, but he can. And they say, "What do you want?" And he says, "Peace." And then over in Zion, the Sentinels pour in and suddenly halt. And the machines jack Neo into the Matrix. And then they say, "If you fail," and he goes, "I won't." And then Niobe and Morpheus. This is a weird way this is cut, right? Because you're supposed to feel like they have impending doom. But... in a movie that moves a little bit faster, you would have had the breach sequence happening as he was going into the Matrix to fight, and then have them like right before they kill, like right before that killer blow happens to Morpheus and Neo, as they're like holding each other in their arms, and like there's a child in the background that's like, no, no, that right before it stops, like right at his face, right? Because Neo would have done that. But instead they just stop and everyone has time to be like, oh, like, I guess we're taking a break. Let's go get a latte. Like, it's very weird. It kind of kills the momentum of this film.
I'm jumping ahead just a little bit, but it's in line with the criticism you have here. Like, when it all ends, like, the dude just kind of runs out to the where the big rave was and just like, hey, guys, the war's over. Yeah. And they're just kind of like, cool. Like, it's so fucking just casual at this point. And it's also like, how? What? Do these
how do you
just,
know?
How, what? How what? You know? What? But continue. Yeah.
It's weird.
Tim, they're machines, you know what I mean? Unless they're killing you, they want to be friends. Then it's and like at the reality is like we were always the bad guys, you know?
Yep.
The machines did nothing wrong. The they just wanted to be free.
No faith but what you make it. Neo and Morpheus watch as the Sentinels keep a perimeter around them. Niobe, excuse me, and Morpheus watch. And then I think it was either Niobe or Morpheus goes, Neo, he fights for us.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case. Mm-hmm. Just in case the audience didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
Down in the Matrix, Neo squares off with Smith while an infinite number of other Smiths watch. And he says it ends tonight. And the music here is insane. Like, way more extra than it needs to be. But whatever. Tim Lang said, sorry, Tim.
I love it. It's just it deserved a scene that matches its epicness. And they didn't fucking do it.
I hate fight scenes where, like, no one can get hurt. And so they're just lobbing each other through like giant skyscrapers and shit, and it's like, oh, they're both fine though. Like
the better version of this fight is Final Fantasy VII Advent Children, Cloud versus Sephiroth, and it's like seeing this, and that was a couple years later, but you could clearly tell they were like, oh, of course, they fucked that up. We're gonna do this shit better. I do like the use of the rain, and you can see the Matrix code in the rain as it's kind of dropping, which is cool. But there are certain things that are like interesting of just like the way that their forces kind of push the raindrops in different ways, and they do it a couple different times. Mm-hmm. I liked that, but that's really all I have to say about this fight.
Yeah, that stuff is really, really cool, and you're right. I like when they hit each other really hard and the concussion of like a bubble of energy comes out with the rain. That stuff's cool. What I don't like is they're like, we could do some really cool slow-mo here, and they follow an obviously CG fist into an obviously CG face. And it's like, oh man, that didn't work. Those characters look like a mediocre Pixar film. Anyway, a lot of this is super anime, so you got to give it that. Smith can fly too. Can you feel it, Mr. Anderson, closing on you? I really should thank you. After all, it was your life that taught me the purpose of my life to end, to all life, which is to end. Neo does the same move that he did in the first. He just squared off against Smith and he waves him forward. And it's like, eh. Whatever. The fight goes on, yada, yada, yada. I'm going to skip ahead here a little bit. Neo struggles to his feet after Anderson knocks him down. And he says, why? Why get up? Why keep fighting? Do you even know? Freedom, love, all of those constructs, just like the Matrix. Why, Mr. Anderson? Why do you persist?
Persist.
And Neo says, because I choose to. Okay, cool.
So it's not defined destiny, Nick. It's the theme of the movie. And they really were like, you know what? We got to nail it home one more time.
It's fun that you say that. You're right, because this is, remember, part two. Like, that was the Matrix. That was part one. This is part two. If this were a whole different movie, this is not the theme of this movie. There is no theme of this movie.
You're so right. You're so fucking right about that. Yeah.
That was the one they hammered home to you last movie, which is why in this one, you're like, it doesn't really hit. We have a little bit of setup about the whole concept of destiny, like fate versus, free will in this one with the Oracle, but it didn't really slap. Anyway, Smith bursts out of the rubble and punches Neo to the ground away. And then he goes, wait, I've seen this. This is the end. Yes, you were lying right here. And I stand here. I'm supposed to say something like, everything that has a beginning has an end, Neo. And then he's like, what did I say? No, that isn't right. This can't be right. Get away from me. And he says, what are you afraid of? You were right, Smith. You were always right. It was inevitable. And he's like, is that how you say that? Is that how you say that? Smith plunges his hand in Neo. It starts with a goo. He starts with a goo, but this time Neo just lets it happen. And he says, and then he just pours into Smith and goes, is it over? And then Neo, Smith nods. But up in the real world, jacked in, Neo struggles and then screams as a cross of golden light from inside his heart radiates out back in the Matrix. Smith explodes in light. Soon after, all the Smiths explode in a ripple of cascading light, and then the city goes dark. And then up in the machine world, the machines lay Jesus Neo down, and then they say it is done. And he's done.
Kill all the humans.
The street corner where Neo and Smith fight in the craters, the same corner where Neo made the phone call at the end of the Matrix 1 where he flies away. So that's a fun nod there. Yeah.
Cool. You can't tell because it's so rainy and so dark and you can't really see what's happening. But it's like, you know, it's fun that we do have this movie to thank for the amazing scenes in Man of Steel, because obviously Zack Snyder saw this and his only takeaway was it's cool when people fly and punch each other.
Punch harder.
Over in Zion, the machines take off and leave, and then someone says he did it. Then the kid takes that to for his cue to just run around and scream to everyone, he saved us. It's over. He did it. To which Morpheus is like, whoa, we don't know that for sure. Like, we should verify that.
Okay, what did he do? What are the machines? Like, where are they at? Is the war over? Are we homies? Or is the war over? They're just not going to kill us right now.
Yeah.
He goes and tells the people the war is over. They're all just like, cool. Yay! I don't need any more information. I got it. You're fine.
Not one person goes, are you sure?
Yeah, like, how?
I got it, guys. And you could tell there was a deleted scene, though, if I had directed this movie where someone was like this. Oh, God damn it, that kid's still alive. Morpheus asks Niobe, is this real? And she hugs him. She says, Neo, wherever you are, thank you. The machines drag Neo Jesus' dead body away from the Matrix. And as it resets itself, everything resets. We get the black cat again, too. So it's like,
we see same cat. Stuff. They cast the same cat.
Of course they did.
And they used the same meow from the first movie.
That's nice.
These are the facts I got for you. Kev, I got a fact for you. During the scene at the club, the Merovingian is wearing his tie in a fashion called the Merovingian tie knot.
Kevin knows all about
you're welcome
and Tina. Give us that fidget spinner, Tim, you golden goose. Sati wakes up and wishes the black cat good morning.
You just say things, Nick.
And then he's our golden guy. The architect joins the Oracle on a park bench to congratulate her, and she says, well, now ain't this a surprise. And then he says, just how long do you think this piece is going to last? And she says, what about the others, the ones who want out? And she says, obviously they will be freed. And she says, I have your word. And he says, what do you think I am, human? And it's like, well, okay. Seraph and Sati join Oracle as the sun comes up on the city with a beautiful rainbow sky. And she says, did you do that? She asks Sati, did you do that? And Sati says, yes, for Neo. Will we ever see him again? And the Oracle says, I suspect so, one day. And then Seraph asks her if she always knew. And she goes, no, but I believed. And that is
this scene. Two facts here. This is the only time in any of the three movies that we see greenery and a blue sky in the Matrix. And in the last scene, the bench that they're on has a small metal dedication plate that says in memory of Thomas Anderson. So motherfucker's dead and they're talking about it there. This last movie, I was like, wow, this is the most limp dick ending to a movie I've ever seen. Like, I think they outdid themselves here.
Yeah,
like,
they did.
This is so like, holy crap. Like, wow, that's it. That's how you're going to end this. No philosophical things for me to take home and think about. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Cool.
You have to imagine that at this point, the Wachowskis were just like, I want to be done with this too.
Yeah.
We're all done. We can all agree this is run its course, right?
Yeah. I would say, just going back to the whole thing with Smith. Because I've always wondered this, and maybe you guys have some idea. Why is assimilating the Oracle now all of a sudden giving Smith basically the equal power of the one? So are we saying that the Oracle this entire time has been as powerful as Neo and just not used that power?
Was she the original one? Because like, she's just part of the program that like helps reset the Matrix.
Part of the system, yeah.
Yeah.
So now she can fly or Smith now by assimilating or her can fly and is just as strong as Neo, actually stronger because he defeats him. So I don't know. That's a really
good point.
Well, the other thing is like, did Neo want to win or was he trying to?
Oh, no. He wasn't. Yeah. 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 I guess that's an important point.
But also Smith was only fighting him with one Smith.
Yeah. He could have.
Yeah.
But I remember like Neo didn't need to fight, right? Like he could have been like, stop and like, change the Matrix in that way, like
in the machine world, though. Yeah, I don't fucking know.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so.
It's very convoluted, but the important thing is that it's over.
Yeah, little thing,
or is it?
Nick, hit me with haiku interview.
Seven syllables in the middle. You got five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Now over to you, Tim.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your reviews in haiku form, just like Lee Palero did. Infected robots with an Agent Smith virus. Neo's the vaccine. Okay, Soda says he was a hacker, then became it. No, sorry. He was a hacker, then became IT, I guess. The Matrix, baby. Jeremy Zuccarello says, I liked one of three. Now fear for the fourth fills me. How bad can it be?
Bad.
Andrew Feister says, these sequels are dope. I feel I've been lied to. Oh, look, Weird Sex Club. You might be alone on that one, Andrew. You might
he
be
likes
alone
them
on that.
These are cool.
Now for Ragu Bagu. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Ragu.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Bagu. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys here for The Matrix in Review. Number one on the list is Agent Smith and the Machines from the first Matrix. And then number two right now is Agent Smith, the Merovingian, and the Architect. Where do we want to put multiple Agent Smiths?
Agent Smith and do Ex Machina, maybe?
Deus Ex Machina, sure.
Yeah. Deus Ex Machina just seems like a good guy the entire time we are with the character. I mean, it doesn't matter. Regardless, it's last for me. Yeah. Does anyone have an argument that it's at all?
No, I don't have an argument, no.
Yeah, you're right.
I just put Deus Ex, like Deus Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Deus Ex. I watched, what was the Animatrix? Well, I watched like half of the Animatrix. And it just seems like the machines were like, they were just trying to live and stuff, and we just didn't trust them and killed them all.
I don't trust machines.
Just trying to live, man.
Yeah. I never trust machines. I mean, if you've seen Terminator, you know eventually it's going to go down one of two ways. Either us or them.
Yep.
And it's usually them because they're machines. They have no feelings and no morality.
So,
and they're not sleepy.
Ranking these, I don't even think we need to vote or anything. Number one, we have Matrix 1. Number two, we have Matrix 2. Number three, if I am correct, is Matrix 3, Revolutions. We have Matrix Resurrections coming out soon, and I do not think it has the potential to be number one. I really hope it's number two.
I agree.
I think it's going to be. I think everything we've seen of it already fills me with more hope, but I don't know. They could drop the ball, but we'll have to wait and see. It comes out in a week. Holy crap, a week from now.
I know,
now.
It's crazy.
But we will not be reviewing it until the first week of January. Keep that in mind. It will be available on HBO Max as well, so you can watch it during the break if you do not want to go to a theater, and we'll be there for you in the beginning of next year. Paris, being the biggest Matrix fan here, what is your hype levels for this?
I'm very hyped for it. And I think it actually just ties into everything we talked about today, in that now Lana Wachowski has had 20 years of feedback from those last two movies to understand what they got right and all that they got wrong, and apply that in what Resurrections is going to be. So I'm going in hopeful. I think even that little clip they showed during the Game Awards kind of gives me some faith that they get it. And they're going to do this in a smart way, you know, for how they're going to reintroduce the Matrix and how Neo and Trinity and all them are still around. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I'm interested. But until next time, let us know in the comments below what you think about the Matrix. Nick, do you have something for me?
No, I was going to say something, but it's useless.
I don't even know how to end after that. Bye, guys.